Blog Talk Radio.
How are you?
It's strange.
I don't think he's talking to me this week.
You got to pick up every stitch.
Hey, I can hear you, but just barely over the music.
Well, turn that stuff down, baby. Man. There you go. Man.
Here we go. Yeah, we got to
turn that. I've been screaming at you to turn that down for 3 minutes.
It comes preloaded at a certain level. I've never turned any of them down, actually. Everyone, welcome everybody here to Conover U. with Rodney Lee Conn over out in California and his sidekick Scott out here in wonderful Texas. Texas, number one state in the country to do business, and, of course, California, the number 50 state to do business. We're going to have a great show tonight. Rodney, you're going to talk, we're going to laugh, we're going to cry, whether he wants me to or not. We've got great things going on, and we got some horrific things going on. This is a show for the grassroots. This is a show to help folks find the right places to go, find the right people to listen to, and find the right information to get out so that we can save this great nation. How are you doing, Rodney?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing very good, as a matter of fact. I'm all fired up, and I'll tell you why. I have a new goal. I think it's really important, Scott, as you know, to make some goals for yourself. I think it really helps in life, and people that make goals usually do a little bit better, and I make goals all the time. But lately, I haven't had a goal, as you know. I've been a little bit down in the dumps. I've been a little bit down on myself, but not anymore, and I'll tell you why, Scott. Because the ratings came out today. And we are kicking ass, but we're not doing as well as we could be doing, Scott. And now I've got something to shoot for, and I am so fired up. And on that day, I don't want to get real technical about what's going on, but we are very close to being the number one show. And what is it? What is our network called? We're on Blog Talk Radio, but we're on another syndicated network, too.
Yeah, we're syndicated through Pundit Press. With Dan Butcher.
Pundit Press, and we're getting close to being the number one show. And there you are, we've been there 3 weeks. We're already just about to take over. And so now I have a brand new goal, and that's to put everybody in our rearview mirrors, and we're going to do it. And one of the ways we're going to do it is tonight, a very special treat for Conover U regulars and Conover U new listeners, and it is this, the return of Joe the Plumber Wurzelbacher. He's going to be calling in here anytime now. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, Scott, there was quite a scuffle up last time he was on the show, and I guess we're going to get that resolved. I'm glad, personally, that he's calling in and he's not here in person. It could get ugly. People have been babbling about it on the Internet today, and so we'll see what happens. But Joe will call in also a little bit later on in the show. We're going to have somebody calling in, Scott, this will interest you, from a place called Murrieta, California. Now, normally, Murrieta, California, very slow-moving, agricultural, very rural town, a little bit south of where I live, here in Hesperia, California, in the Inland Empire. Murrieta, California, not used to a lot of controversy, but, Scott, they are at the center of the universe this week, and I'll tell you why. You already know, but I'm going to tell you so everybody knows. Murrieta, California, is a Republican stronghold. It is a red area, red city, red part of California. And as you know, California, very Democrat, very liberal. There is a legislature in Sacramento, our capital, that is so liberal. How liberal are they, Rodney? Here's how liberal they are. They are so whacked out liberal crazy that our governor, Jerry Brown, is considered a conservative by them. He vetoes Jerry Brown. Jerry Moonbeam Brown actually has had to veto legislation coming out of Sacramento because it's so far to the left. I mean, they are so far to the left, I'm surprised they haven't fallen into the Pacific already. So my point being here is that this is a blue state. This is a state that the Republicans don't even come to because it's just gone. I mean, you can't win. I don't care who you put up for governor. You can't win. Sorry. And the state legislature has a super-duper majority. Now, you've heard of majorities. You've heard of veto-proof majorities. You've heard of super-majorities. They have a super-duper majority. You know, you don't hear that a lot, but on this show, you get educated, my friend. California, land of the liberals, has these very small conservative pockets. Some are located in agricultural areas where there's a lot of farmers, a lot of NRA members. Out here in the district that I live, District 8, left right-leaning, conservative-leaning district. We still have a congressman with an R next to his name. I'll just say that much. And then there's Dana Rohrabacher down in Orange County. And then you got a few Republicans sprinkled here and there. Oh, there's the great Tom McClintock, who's still excellent, excellent conservative Republican representative out here. And then you got your Kevin McCarthy's and you got your other Republican name only. As far as I'm concerned, my point is this. Murrieta, California is one of these areas. Why is it in the news this week, Scott? Well, I'll tell you. Because children that have come from Central America seeking a better life are being shipped, being bused, and dropped and attempted to being dropped off, just dumped, basically, in Murrieta, California. Now, were you aware of this, Scott? Have you been reading about this in the news? Tell me.
I have been reading a lot about it on the news. And, boy, did they stand up and those buses turned around.
It was a Cliven Bundy moment here on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday as these buses, and they're massive, they're big, there were three of them initially, came over from Texas, and of course the border towns, as you've been seeing, are stretched to the limit. They're so overwhelmed in Texas by this influx. We'll get into the details of which a little bit later, but I wanted to say that we're going to have someone call in from Murrieta that have firsthand accounts of the people in this small town going out of their houses when they heard the news that these buses were on the way from Texas. And they stood in the middle of the road. They just got in the middle of the road and said, no, you're not coming into this city. Sorry. Of course, the police show up and there's, you know, cop cars everywhere and vans and the buses had to stop. You saw this on television, Scott, or maybe you saw videos of it posted on Facebook and elsewhere. I'm sure you
saw it. Actually, I read about it at JoePlumber.com.
That's right, where everybody should be getting their news, JoeForAmerica.com. And anyway, a little later on in the show, I forget the name, but someone's going to be calling. I tried to get Lainey Sloan to call in, but she got all, you know, what do you call? Not embarrassed that she got all shy on me, but she got us. She's getting us someone else to call in from Murrieta. It's an amazing story, and like I said, it's our Cliven Bundy moment because people just came out of their houses, and this just goes to show you what a true grassroots movement this ongoing conservative movement is in the United States, and it's strong as ever. This talk of the Tea Party being dead is nuts. And I'm, you know, as far as I'm concerned, keep talking. Scott, am I right? You just keep talking, so telling me the Tea Party's dead. I don't care.
You are exactly right. And, you know, the Tea Party is not an organization. And we've got some organizations that have the Tea Party name in them, and they do a lot of good things, and they do a lot of things that aren't so helpful. But let me tell you, the Tea Party is a mentality. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican. I'm a Ronald Reagan Republican. I'm a Tea Party Republican. And I'm all three of those things because they all basically mean the same thing. I stand for smaller government because I know the federal government can't micromanage. I'm for lower taxes because until you can find a Congress that can spend a lot better than what they're spending right now, they don't need any more money. They need less money. And you know, it's just the way it goes. And we'll let you know, speaking of JoeForAmerica.com, Joe the Plumber's website, we do have him on the line, Rodney, so I will let you bring him in when you're ready. You there, Rodney? Rodney.
Well, you know what? I pulled the old Scott Osborne trick. I had myself on mute, and I'm sitting there talking to myself.
All right, there you go.
What I was Yeah, what I was saying is we have Joe Wurzelbacher, better known as Joe the Plumber, here on Final Review tonight. Are you there, Joe, my friend? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can hear him. Sitting here in my backyard, got a nice big fire going, smoking my cigarettes, you know, having fun.
Smoking your what?
Cigarettes. They're not
oh,
the left-handed
cigarettes. I just wanted to make that clear that we do not condone any tomfoolery here on Count Over You. Unless unless it's running guns in Honduras, which I guess Scott Osborne may or may not still be involved. But it's neither here nor there. Scott may start crying if I keep on his ass like that. So back to you, Joe. You're out in the backyard. You're having a ciggy. Is it dark there yet? You're 3 hours ahead of us. It must be.
No, it's not quite. It doesn't get darker until about 9:30, but it is about 65 degrees, and you know, I've been chopping wood half the day and just had a nice little fire in the backyard. It's nice to relax and kick back.
See, this is why I hang around with Joe Wurzelbacher, Scott, because he's a real man. And I try to get man tips from this guy, and I don't ask him directly. I just observe him. He chops wood. He smokes cigarettes. He hangs out in the backyard. He's 65 degrees. Nobody tells this guy what to do. He does what he wants. He, you know, you should have been on that commercial for Manwich. You know that? You know, remember that commercial? How do you handle a hungry man? And then there's Joe Wurzelbacher chopping wood. But wait, what? Tell us what's going on with JoeForAmerica.com. Let's get the business out of the way here. The big story must be this so-called immigration. I always put that in quotes. Immigration. This isn't immigration, is it?
No, it's actually more of an invasion. I mean, if you can call it what it really is, and it really is an invasion, and our federal government's not keeping people that want to harm the American way out of the country. And, I mean, they're failing their duties, as a lot of Americans think Barack Obama's failing. He's allowing drug cartels into the southern borders of Arizona. He's allowing young women to be raped on a regular basis. He's allowing so many atrocities and tragedies to happen in the name of democratic freedom. I don't know. It's a stretch to me.
It's really kind of pathetic down there. And, you know, they got it all wrapped in this, we have to help these children. Now, let me go on record, and I've taken a lot of heat for this, as you know. Let me go on record as saying, when a child, no matter where they're from, is on U.S. soil, we got to take care of them. I mean, I'm all for that. If there's a child, you know, it's not their fault that they brought to America. It's not their fault that they got raped by a bunch of, you know, vile pedophilistas on the way to America, because this government, and I'm talking about Democrats and Republicans, this government has given the green light, Joe, to Central America to send their kids here. Have they not? Am I being outrageous?
No, you're not being unreasonable at all, and that's why I want to reiterate it. It's not illegal immigration. It truly is an invasion, on our way of life. And, I agree with you. Once a child's here, how do you sit there and turn a child away and send them back, and, especially with some of the things they're suffering in getting here? But the fact that Barack Obama essentially gave them the green light, all these atrocities that are happening fall right at his doorstep. He's ultimately responsible for these little girls getting raped and being abused, sold into slavery. I just don't know how. Well, I know how this guy sleeps at night, because he doesn't care.
He is involved in human trafficking, and I'm telling you, I'm not being outrageous. There are multiple reports, and reporters are going down there, and they're directly finding evidence in places where children, little kids, 8 years old, 4 years old, 12 years old, they are being rented. Now listen to me, Conover U audience. These kids are being rented by adults who want amnesty in America. They want American citizenship. They want to come here illegally and stay. They will rent a child, take that child with them, because the odds of an adult being allowed to stay in America if they have a child with them, are about 50 times higher than if they're coming here alone. And the odds are pretty good if they're coming here alone. Heck, if you got a child with you, you're in. You're as good as gold, my friend. And they are renting these children out in Central American country. And why am I blaming the president? Because he's enabling it. They're not doing anything to stop it. And in fact, they've been orchestrating this. And these little girls, these little innocent children that these effing liberals supposedly care about are being raped, abused, they are being traumatized on these 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 mile treks, on these death trains where every stop they're being shook down for money and sexually assaulted. My God, Joe, how is having political power in the U.S. worth that kind of collateral damage, you think? What's your take on what's going on there?
Well, just, you know, anybody that understands right and wrong, obviously, you know, their heart goes out to these children. You know, I mean, you know, one thing I've always been, you know, told is I'm a little too blunt, a little too tactless. You know, I said, hey, put up a fence and start shooting. You know, I obviously wasn't sitting there talking about shooting unarmed men and women and children. I was more referring to the drug cartel, but at the same time, I do want our border secured. But that all being said, you know, you don't sit there and allow something like this to happen to children. It's wrong on so many levels. And the fact that the media is not really beating Obama's doors down, the fact that, you know, no one's taking pitchforks and tar to this son of a gun, is just, it's beyond me. I mean, you just... But that's the media. That's the spin. That's the power they have. You know, hey, look over there. Nothing's going on over here. Just keep looking over there. You know, look at the VA stuff. Look at the Benghazi scandal. Don't worry about your borders. You know, we'll take care of that. You know, they just have so many people looking in so many different directions that when something really serious happens, and, you know, and I don't care if these aren't American citizens or not, you know, they're children. And you don't do that kind of stuff to kids.
It's amazing to me what is going on, and how dare they, you know, say that I'm unfeeling toward children. No, no, I'm the one that cares, you devils. These children should not be coming here in the first place. Now they're going, well, they're being abused in their home countries. Well, that may be, and that's wrong, and I'd be absolutely behind every effort to get this scumbag that are running those banana republics to stand up and fly right. But the answer is not to have these kids hopping these moving death trains, losing their arms and legs and their lives, and then if they manage to get on these trains, every 200 miles they're stopped and raped. My God, what kind of world are we living in? This country is supposed to be a little bit better than that. What are we, a bunch of savages that will just get just because you know, they're going to bring some future Democrat voters with them? It's okay to put these kids through that, Joe?
Well, I mean, to further your point, a different subject, but to go along the line of how just crazy and out of touch the left is. And you got this girl, Kendall Jones, a cheerleader. She's a hunter. You know, she goes over to Africa, kills a couple of zebras and lions, and, you know, these things feed villages. It's for conservation. And the left has just gone up in arms the last 3 or 4 days. They think it's the most terrible thing in the world for this girl to take a picture with a lion. But the point is, and what everybody seems to be missing, is 1 million babies a year are killed in Africa, and the left don't give a damn. You know, but they care about a lion being killed. They care about a zebra being killed. But these babies are being killed and murdered. You know, through civil wars, these people are killing each other. You know, you've got... you know, their own citizens being killed by their own governments over there, and yet they're more worried about a damn lion or zebra. I mean, really, you think Obama and the people on the left care that a little 14-year-old girl is being raped right this second as you and I are talking, coming up to America? They see her as a future voter. They don't see the tragedy and everything that's happening there now. They think, you know what, once she gets here, you know, that's just going to strengthen our party. And damn the consequences, and damn her tragedy, and damn everybody else, as long as they're going to stay in power. That's all it's about, is power. and they'll go as far as they need to maintain that power.
We've got Rodney on mute again. I'll throw in here. You know, I aim into both what you both said.
I did it again. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. That happens. I know. I've done it a few times myself.
I was on a roll, too. You should have heard me here. Myself. Now I forgot what I was going to say. Go ahead, preacher.
Well, and you know, we're all compassionate here, and we're all immigrants here in our genealogies. You know, we live in a new nation relatively, and I'm a firm believer in immigration. I'm a firm believer in compassion. There's thousands of homeless people in Dallas. Some of them are there by their own will and their own accord. Some are there because of rough circumstances. I'd love to help every one of them, but it would do me no good, absolutely do me no good to just bring them all into my house and blame them all on the floor in sleeping bags. Pretty soon nobody would have enough food. But this is a humanitarian crisis that has been caused by Washington, D.C. They have not only encouraged it on accident, they've encouraged it on purpose. And I'm forever talking with my girls about the difference between accident and on purpose. I got a lot of leeway for when you make a mistake. But when you turn around and you do something on purpose, the punishment is pretty severe. And we've got a president who basically laid this out. They're trying to overwhelm the system. And it has far-reaching circumstances. I'd like to say that we're getting some news in our chat room. Dan Butcher, I believe it's Dan or it's Brian, is mentioning, it's Brian, mentioning that the kids that were there headed to Marietta, they're right now in the process of flying them back here to Texas and into Houston. And, you know, we got to get a stop to this. Governor Perry's got the ability to sit down and really stop this. The governor of Texas doesn't have a whole lot of superpower. Our Constitution kind of set it up that way. But he's got some constitutional authority to go down there and stop this. And it's just, we're going to have to take up. It's time for the states to take up and say, no more federal government. You've way gone beyond the pale. Hand it back to you, Rodney.
You got a big problem, though, this time around, Scott, and I'll tell you why. The big, big problem, Joe, if you have any insight on this, please just chime in. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
I was going to say my take on this, just to follow up with what Scott's saying, was, you know, Washington, D.C. thinks it's the United States of Washington, D.C. You know, this is the United States of America. States make up America. And, you know, when the federal government won't do its job, then the states need to step up and do the job. I mean, you know, Texas is being overrun. Arizona's being overrun. California is, California welcomes it because you guys are just crazy and wild and wacky out there. But, you know, New Mexico, true. I mean, all these places, you know, they're being overrun. And, you know, the taxpayers there locally are having to foot the bill, and they can't. And then, you know, taxpayers nationally, I mean, if you check with fair.org, I think the American taxpayers are on the hook something like $600 million or close to $1 billion a year taking care of illegal immigrants, people that are invading our country. And we, the taxpayer, are footing that bill. Sanctuary cities are even worse. And, I mean, I think they're traitorous to the country for being sanctuary cities.
But I think you're right about California. You're absolutely spot on about California. In fact, they dropped a couple of these kids off right at my house. I didn't mind. They're out cleaning my pool right now. They're doing a hell of a job. But let me tell you something else, and I'll tell you, Scott, why you have a real problem this time. And it has to do with the difference in U.S. law, how you treat people from Mexico and how you treat people from Central America. Let me explain. We have an immigration policy. In other words, U.S. federal law says this. If a child shows up from Mexico on U.S. soil, we as a country, have the right to immediately return that child to Mexico. We can turn them away. Now, I'm not saying we do. I'm just saying we can. We have every right. If somebody shows up with a kid and we want to get, you know, we want to turn all three people back, which happens every single day, hundreds and hundreds of people are turned back trying to get into the country. be they adult or child. They're from Mexico. It's perfectly legal to do so, and it happens all the time. Guess what? U.S. law treats children specifically from foreign countries, in this case Central American children, cannot be turned back under U.S. law. You may not, once a child is on U.S. soil, you may not force them to go back. If you do, you're violating U.S. law. The law states that they must be protected, they must be fed, they must be housed, they must be cared for in a medicinal sense, and they must be processed and then placed with family or friends, in other words, released into the country, our country, America, given a court date for their immigration court date for their illegal or legal status, and a promise to return for that court date. Now, isn't it just a tad bit strange that all of these tens of thousands, some say it's bordering on 100,000 people in this big influx, this wave, don't you find it just slightly incredible that they're all from Central America and none of them, virtually none of them, are from Mexico? Mexico's right next door. They don't have to hop on a death train and get raped. They may have to only come 50 miles instead of 3,000 miles. They're all from Central America. Do you think that's a coincidence, my friends? Because it is not. These kids cannot legally be returned. And Scott, I'm all for militias going down there and helping the border agents out. They've done it in the past very effectively. And I'm all for the state. I'm all for Rick Perry, who I kind of think of as a little bit of a clown, but that's for another show. I'm all for him sending down the Texas troops to help out, but guess what, dude? Here's your problem. They cannot turn these kids back legally. The problem is the border's not secure. If that border was secure and no one could get in like it ought to be, like it should be, like it was legislated for, like the funds were appropriated for years ago, if that actually happened, cough, cough, way to go, Republicans. Well, then the first 100 that tried to get in would send the message back pretty quickly. Hey, we can't get in. Do you think 90,000 would follow if the first 100 couldn't get in? I got news for you. They'd stay put. Tell me where I'm going wrong, Joe Wurzelbacher. Tell me where I'm nuts.
Well, you're not nuts. I mean, you know, I was reading an article today, and it was pretty bluntly said. You know, we're always told fences don't work. Well, fences don't work. Why is there a fence around the White House? So there's that question.
So that's that's so Michelle Obama can't immigrate into our country. She has to stay right there. And that's okay with me. That fence works. I understand she's fashioning a pole vault out of a large stick of celery. So she may be out at any minute.
Let's fast forward a little bit. You hear about the U.S. congressman that got blocked from entering these child immigrant facilities?
Is this one of those jokes that you're setting me up for? Did you hear about the congressman that, or is this a legitimate story?
No, legitimate story. U.S. congressman from Oklahoma went to a military base, and they would not let him in. You know, a federal representative go to a military base, and these guys said, no, you know, you got to make an appointment. The soonest we can get you in would be July 21st. And so, I mean, the question is, why? Why are they, keeping a congressman off a military post and being able to see, you know, what these people are setting up? I mean, they call themselves the brown shirts.
I have a story that dovetails exactly with what you're talking about, and that's the brown shirts inside these medical facilities.
That's scary, man. I mean, that gives me chills.
They're calling themselves the brown shirts. Now, you know, sometimes people joke, and it's nothing to joke about because we're talking about Nazis here. Sometimes people you know, call authority, people in authority. They call them brown shirts. That's in reference to Hitler's secret domestic police. Does that sound familiar? That's in reference to Hitler's police that grew fairly large during that dark period of history. And they were literally called the brown shirts because, of course, they wore brown shirts. What if they would have wore magenta shirts? I don't think the effect would have been as good. How about you guys? Hey, here come the magenta shirts. I think people would have laughed. They picked brown shirts.
This comes back to the whole manly thing.
And here's another thing. If I was UPS, I'd get rid of those uniforms myself. It scares the hell out of me. Anyway, down here in these medical facilities, and as you say, inside of, well, there's a story right out of Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, Scott, in your state, my former state. I'm a graduate of the University of Texas, Hook'em Horns. I don't know why I mentioned that. I just was trying to puff myself up a little bit like I knew what I'm talking about. But at Lackland Air Force Base, they are housing thousands and thousands of these kids. And a news reporter from Fox News went down there and got a couple of the medical professionals to actually talk. Now, get this, guys. These people are being threatened. These medical professionals are being threatened with their jobs if they speak to anybody about what's going on down there. But a couple of them have, and they report the same thing, Joe. They have hired security forces. Our government has hired independent private security forces to go down to places like Lackland Air Force Base and other medical facilities where these kids are being housed with one purpose, and that is to keep information from getting out. And they're calling themselves brown shirts. Now, what do you make of that, Scott Osborne? I haven't started quoting scripture yet, but I will momentarily.
Well, you know what it is. Joe said it. It's scary. And I'll tell you my opinion on it. And we'll just see if we've got some congressmen that have got the gall, got the balls, and I will say that, to stand up and do it. They need about 43 congressmen to go down there and sit on that front door, and they say, we're not leaving until you let us in, and make a big deal about it. And I bet you really quickly they'll find a way to start letting them in there.
It's and beyond this, they're complicit in all this. You're going to tell me that the federal government does not know what's going on? Tell me. They're the ones hiring these private security forces that are going down there, and they only have one job. They're not down there to make sure that immigrants don't beat each other up or that the immigrants aren't not being abused by border agents. No, they're not down there for that. They're down there to make sure information doesn't get out. They're threatening doctors and nurses, saying you're going to be fired if you talk to anybody about what you see. A couple of them did talk to Fox News. Guess what they found? And I don't hear anybody saying this didn't happen. I don't hear anybody arguing with this or suing or anything else. They're down there, and they've got some incredibly dangerous contagion that's going on with these people coming into the country. There is tuberculosis, scabies. These kids are just ridden with lice, and there's an incredible risk that this poses to the American public. I mean, this is the kind of thing where you would quarantine people, but instead of quarantining, what are they doing? The only quarantine they're doing is the information. They have threatened, Scott and Joe, they have threatened to arrest doctors and nurses at Lackland if they divulge any information about any contagion threat at these refugee camp houses where these illegal alien children at Lackland Air Force Base are being held and being processed. They're being put on planes. They're being put on planes. You're taking kids that may have infectious diseases, and you're flying them around. My God, this is like a bad movie starring Dustin Hoffman. Every bad movie has him in. Well, apparently some of these guys broke their confidentiality agreements and talked to this guy. Who is he? Todd Starnes at Fox News. One of them said it's a very, very submissive atmosphere Once you step onto the grounds, you abide by their laws. They call them the brown shirt laws. Now, doesn't this sound like I'm making it up? Joe, does it sound like crap? You go, 5 years ago, you'd have said, you know, that Glenn Beck has gone crazy. Right. 5 years ago? So here we are talking about it.
Absolutely. I mean, any more these days, I was just talking to my dad about this earlier today. You know, the government's listening to everything you say, and you know, and don't you do the computer because they're copying everything you're doing. I mean, it all sounds like a bunch of hogwash. You know, conspiracy theorists out to the ninth power. But you know, now that it's been confirmed, they are listening to us and copying what we are doing on our email. Yeah, I kind of listen to conspiracy theorists a lot more. I think they got a little bit more on the ball than we've given them credit for. And, I mean, something like this would not have happened 15, 20, 30 years ago. You would just it's amazing to think something like this can even happen in such a free country where citizens and reporters are supposed to be talking about really what's going on instead of being hushed up. You never think it would happen here, and that's why people are so lazy in voting and getting involved in the government, because ultimately they got that mindset, well, it'll never happen in America. You know, we'll always be free. We'll always have our rights. You know, because it never happens to me, it'll always happen to the next guy. It's going to happen over, you know, in a different country. It's just not going to happen here in America. Well, I'm here to tell you, folks, it's happening in America every day. Your liberty, your freedoms, your rights are being chipped away while you just sit there and allow it to happen. And, you know, we gotta put a stop to it. To further that, you know, I think it's important to, you know, elect more people from the armed services. Get some veterans in there that understand what service to country actually means instead of these blood-sucking lawyers and people who just want to make $1 million off of Washington, D.C. We need some veterans in there and people that really love the country to help this our freedom slipping through our fingers.
You know, we were warned by our founding fathers. You know, they were the ones that said, listen, just as Joe is articulating, this liberty can be lost in one generation. You know, you got to fight for years, for decades to get freedom. People fight for hundreds of years, generations fight to win their freedom. You lose it in 10 years. I mean, it goes quick. And it goes, just like you're saying, Joe, it just goes. You know, 5 years before some guy was shot in the head and pushed into a ditch in Hitler's Germany, 5 years before that, he was probably, you know, in his business hearing reports of this Adolf Hitler guy going, well, you know, whatever, it'll be cool. You know, he's making the trains run on time. And that's what's going on here. I don't care if people call me nuts, because you know what? I owe some people some apologies from 5, 6 years ago that I was calling them nuts. I was saying, look, you and your theories and your conspiracies and blah, 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 and all this gloom and doom, you're making us conservatives look bad. Well, I apologize because they had it right. And you know what? If you want to bitch at me for bringing up the fact that this is fascism, go right ahead. They're calling themselves brown shirts. These workers at Lackland Air Force Base, do you know if they show up with a cell phone in their car or in their possession, they're immediately fired? You cannot possess a cell phone. They are so worried that information on this giant scam is going to get out that they will actually fire you if you bring your cell phone to work. Any other communication device, you're fired. Anybody caught with a phone, fired immediately. This paranoia must just be running rampant. One nurse reports that the children had more rights than the workers. The illegal alien children had measles, chicken pox, and obviously little girls that have just experienced 3,000 miles of who knows what. I can't even talk about it. But you know what I'm talking about. You've just come across the desert with who knows who, somebody that rented you. Even if you did come with your mom or your dad, they had to sit there and watch while you were raped. Maybe you fell off the train and you got lost an arm, and you're sitting there with one arm. And you think these evil, vile, rapist monsters care if you only have one arm? They're waiting at the next stop for you, and they're getting on their cell phone, calling their evil cousins, going, hey, we got a nice batch for you on the way. You don't like how I'm talking? Well, then get off my show. I sound like Mark was in that. Anyway, these kids are now in our country, and we got to take care of them. But we got doctors and nurses being threatened by people calling themselves brown shirts. And if they bring a cell phone, or if they talk about it, or if they take a picture, or even if they try to warn the American public, hey, there's going to be an outbreak because you're flying around kids with measles, putting them on buses to Murrieta, California, then you're fired. What if you're a doctor, you went to school for 8 years, and you've been practicing medicine for another 20, hey, you bring a cell phone to work, fired! Because of these scumbags. Can you believe this? I mean, this is like a really, really bad movie. And folks, I know a thing or two about bad movies. This is a bad one. You know what this is, guys? This is President Obama's weapons of mass destruction. That's what this is. Wow, I'm onto something here now. Scott, write this down. Got a pen?
Got a pen.
This is Obama's weapons of mass destruction. And our founding fathers warned us, whenever that was, 200-300 years ago, I don't know. They said the same thing that was said during the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln and other conservative, other Republicans of their day. The same thing all the way up to Ronald Reagan. Said the same thing. The United States will not be conquered by a foreign army. We will not lose to an invading army. Why? Because we kick ass, that's why. Who's going to kick our ass in a war? Nobody! A foreign army will not destroy us. We will be destroyed from within. They've been saying it. They've been warning us, and here we are, boys. Here we are. We are looking at it. They're flying around little raped alien children with scabies and the measles. They're flying them around. What are they, nuts? No, they're not nuts. What happened in January? Way back in January, Nostradamus must work at the Department of Homeland Security. You know that guy? He's alive and well, and he's working at DHS because Nostradamus over there at DHS put an ad up at the BizOp website. That's the government website where they have to put up ads whenever they appropriate things. In other words, when they buy things, they have to put up an ad so everybody has a chance to become that vendor. They put up an ad back in January for illegal alien children escorts to handle 65,000 Central American kids, Latino kids, at the Texas border. How the hell did they know that? Why isn't that on the front page? I mean, it's not like it's not something you can make up. You can go to the damn BizOps website and it's there. You'd think they'd taken it down. You'd think Lois Lerner would have melted that down by now. But no, it's still there. Guys, they don't even care if they're being caught. They are so brazen with this effort. They got so many numbnuts following this guy. What's the deal with Obama? Is he just like the greatest hypnotist in the history of the world? Or is it just people that are stupid? Which is it, Scott?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of both. But it comes down to really a lot of the people just not knowing what's going on. And you know, and part of it is because of what we talked about, what you guys talked about a little bit earlier. The doctors are being told you'll be arrested if you say a word. And we see this. This is not just an isolated incident with this border control problem. This is a pattern on behalf of the left. This is a pattern on behalf of the White House. We've seen it in Common Core. Teachers, principals, superintendents all over the country told, if you talk about Common Core, you will be fired. This is what that Benghazi video, YouTube video, was all about. They didn't use that video as just a deflection off of Barack Obama so that he could win the election because the war against terror had been won. They particularly picked YouTube because they wanted to suppress the freedom of speech. They wanted to scare people that, see, this is what happens. You get taken out on a perp walk if you turn around and you say the wrong thing on social media, on YouTube, on Facebook. We can see it on every issue. We can see them trying to constantly suppress the freedom of speech and tell people, just be quiet. And as long as we continue to be quiet, as long as we allow them to let it happen, we get what we deserve. The American public, the most of the American public, doesn't really have a clue as to what's going on. The grassroots does. Our congressmen do. But the American people just don't. And that's why, Rodney, you and I do this show, is to help try and get the word out, not only just get it out on Blog Talk, but to encourage our listeners, go out and talk to people. Tell them what's going on. You know, I taught sales for a long time, and the sales process is pretty simple. Sell yourself, you sell your problem, and you sell your solution. When you're selling a vacuum cleaner, you go into the house, you take the vacuum that they've got, you vacuum things up, then you show them what's there, and then you use your vacuum and vacuum up more and show them how much that their vacuum missed. There's the problem. What's the solution? Buy my vacuum. We're not out letting the American people know what the problems are, and the people are not seeing it. They come home, they watch sitcoms, they watch CSI, they watch all kinds of things. They don't pay attention to the news. They don't talk about the water cooler. We've been told for decades not to talk about politics and religion, and we've got a bunch of people. We've got a bunch of sheep in this country. Herman Cain was so correct, when he turned around and said the American people have been brainwashed, and they continue to do it. We're not going to let them. We're going to keep getting the word out.
You're listening to Conover U Talk Radio. I'm Rodney Lee Conover. That was Scott Osborne just speaking. On the show tonight is our guest, Joe Wurzelbacher, a.k.a. Joe the Plumber. I want to go to you, Joe, right now and ask. I'm going to take your optimism temperature and say that. By the way, I think Scott Osborne's come up with a pretty good solution there. If we just buy a big enough vacuum, we could vacuum up all these kids right at the border and then ship them back wherever. But what is your optimism level regarding being able to turn the tide on Congress, because President Obama is, by all measures, is going to be president until 2016. I don't see anybody doing anything about that in terms of the lawsuits and the whatnot. They're not going to impeach him. They're just not good. They don't have the nutsack. What is your optimism in actually turning the tide against all this behavior?
Optimism. Actually, I was going to address something similar to this question you're asking me. You know, there's no leadership. You know, we all three on the phone talk about being Republicans. Not me so much anymore. I'm a conservative. I'm an American. Republican was a label we used for conservatives at one point in time. Republican doesn't mean conservative anymore. Republican is just a name. It means absolutely nothing if you look at people like John Boehner, John McCain, Lindsey Graham. You know, it means absolutely nothing. You know, being a conservative American at least means something. But the problem is there is no real leadership. You know, who are the grassroots supposed to look to? Who are the American people supposed to look to? A defunct party? I mean, how are we supposed to, as Republicans or conservatives or just, you know, God-fearing Americans who want to see their country succeed, who are we to look to anymore for true leadership, for people who really want to see things work for the American people, lower taxes, a smaller government, better opportunity for everybody around as opposed to handouts? Who do we look to? I mean, you know, is it Rand Paul? Is it Chris Christie? Is it Herman Cain? Is it Alan West? You know, and if it is, where are they? Why aren't they out there talking more? Why aren't they out there mixing it up more? Or are they huddling up because, you know, there's only a certain way of getting elected and everybody has to fall in line eventually to get elected? You have to pay the, you know, the powers to be to get past that gate. Where are the leaders? Andrew Breitbart was one hell of a leader. That guy mixed it up. He didn't worry about lawsuits. He didn't worry about what he said. He sure as hell didn't give a damn about political correctness. He was a leader that brought people out in the masses, more so than Glenn Beck, more so than Rush Limbaugh, because Breitbart was out there in the fray, mixing it up, not behind a talk show, not behind a website. You know, he was there up front and center challenging the establishment, the Republicans, the Democrats, anybody and everybody. That's what we need. We need people out there challenging them on a regular basis, not playing defense, but attacking, because, damn it, we're right. I mean, we back away from all the different fights that come our day. Illegal immigration, really, we're allowing illegals to come across the border, and we can't stop that. We, you know, the Second Amendment's under attack on a regular basis. Decent moral and values, homosexuals getting married, my God, what is going on? Why are we defending everything when we should be out there attacking these weird sons of guns? Because that's what they are. They are people who are intent on destroying America, and we're sitting here playing a defensive game? Come on.
It is quite amazing when you start stacking up all of the different items. It reminded me that there are so many scandals. And when I say scandal, I'm talking about scandals the magnitude of certainly of Watergate. I mean, when you go back and you think of scandals, the first one that comes to mind is always Watergate. In fact, every time there's a scandal, they put the word gate on the end of it. Barack Obama has so many gates right now. I mean, it's just, it really has overwhelmed anybody who wants to talk about scandal. And I'm sure they didn't plan it this way, but every time a scandal reaches an apex, another one comes up. I mean, you just kind of lose track of the way. I mean, what happened to the story about the emails getting lost and then the hard drives melting down? We can't find them, and they've been recycled, and it just so happens to be that period of time that will make or break this investigation where the civil rights of Americans were being denied by a federal agency as powerful as the IRS in a blatant attempt to shut down political discussion during a presidential election. In a sense, using the IRS to throw an election. And they lost the emails? You don't lose emails unless you're trying to lose emails. They don't just lose. They don't just get lost. Everybody knows that, but we're not talking about it anymore. Why? Because we got the myriad of bus lift coming in from Central America with 90,000 illegal aliens we don't know what to do, and they're being flown around with contagious diseases. Who wants to talk about emails and hard drives being melted down? Lois Lerner must be laughing somewhere, whatever island she's vacationing at. Lois Lerner admitted to doing what she's accused of doing. That comes with it 5 years and $250,000 fine per incident. The woman should be in prison for the rest of her life, and where is she? Where is she?
She's laughing somewhere
in Turks and Caicos. Because she got a raise, she's got a bonus, she's got, I don't know how long she's going to be getting paid, but certainly she has a pretty sweet government pension. And how much bulk money do you think she's received to shut her trap? She could bust this thing wide open with a half day in front of the Senate. And she's already admitted to doing it, but what are we doing? In the middle of the street trying to stop a bus from coming in. And what about Fast and Furious? Hell, I forgot about that one. Who's this Benghazi guy? Some guy down there at the gym that's working me out? Nobody knows what's going on with any of these scandals because there's too many of them. You know what I got? Scandal fatigue. Anyway.
Well, to reiterate it, Rodney, we need leadership. You know, and unfortunately, we're just not seeing it, and that's, you know, why you are out here, Scott's here, myself, our website. You know, we're trying to encourage the youth, you know, the next generation coming up, also the people our age as well.
to stop taking it, to stand up and speak their mind, and stop being shut down. The media use their scare tactics. The politicians use their scare tactics. People are going to have to be brave. This is the home of the brave. We've accomplished a lot of things because of the bravery of American citizens. And usually it was supposed to be in being brave with our enemies. Now we got to do it here at home, and it's sad, but it's what it takes. And with that, I know you got some other guests coming on, some other things to talk about. I just hope the American people will wake up, and they have. They have. We have pockets. We have people doing it. We just need to do a lot more of it.
Well, thanks, Joe, for coming on the show again. It's always great. I hope that you come on a lot. I think it's awesome. I think it's just awesome the way that you've been speaking out. And, I've never told you this, and I've known you for a long time, but you're an amazing guy. And the reason I say that is because you really are a regular guy. And I mean that as a high compliment. I know you really well, and you are a regular Joe. I mean, you're just this American who is concerned. And you happen to get in this tete-a-tete with the candidate, Barack Obama, in whenever that was, 2007 or 2008, in your front yard. And not everybody could go from that to articulating the passion for saving this country. It sounds cliche, but that's what it is at the end of the day. It's like we got to save it. We can't let this continue. But, I wanted to pay you a high compliment, and I wanted to thank you for coming on the show. That was our buddy Joe Wurzelbacher, Scott Osborne. What do you think about that? Pretty wild.
Well, it's somebody I've been wanting to have on a show for a long time. It's nice to have him as a regular call-in. And you're right, Rodney. And see, this is what's so important about our country, is we are made up of 300 million people just like Joe. Now, a handful of them have gotten into government, and some of those, many of those, have gotten to be big-headed and think they're power-hungry and greed. But Joe represents all of us. He represents all of us in a lot of different ways. Joe just wants to continue going through life with the freedom and the liberty to succeed. Just to succeed. And along the way, Joe wants to take and help others succeed along with him. That's what his website's about. I got some good friends that write for Joe for America. Rodney Lee Conover being one of them. Christy Waters being another one of them. Joe, with a plumbing business. I've owned businesses before. And let me tell you, there's nothing any more wonderful than having an employee and being able to write a check and know that you're able to help them out. That's the American dream. Entrepreneurialism is the American dream. And the direction that we're going in will continue to squash that kind of American dream. Barack Obama didn't need to come and tell Joe the plumber. He didn't need to come and sit down on his front lawn and say, I want to take what you've got and spread it around. Joe was already spreading it around. He was already working really hard to help other people succeed. And that's what the left doesn't get. And I'm so thankful, Rodney, because I've wanted to have Joe on a show for a while. I've got a whole long list of people I'd like to really have on the show, and it's always great to have him on. I'll pass it back to you.
Who else do you want to have on the show? Because I'm quite an influence.
Oh, you know who I want to have on the show. I want to have Phyllis Schlafly on the show so badly that I can taste it.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you about Phyllis Schlafly. Phyllis Schlafly was doing what you and I are doing, Rodney, without Facebook, without Twitter, without YouTube, without Blog Talk Radio, and barely without a phone. And she single-handedly did two major, major things that changed the course of history in this United States. Number one, she united the three legs of the conservative movement. You've got a social leg of the conservative movement, you've got an economic, and you've got a sovereignty unit of all three of them. And they were split at the time. They were really not together. She brought them together, And in doing so, she pushed the Equal Rights Amendment, which would have been horrid to men, women, to churches, everywhere. It was already had its teeth in. It was running with a gusto, a lot like Common Core. And she literally, almost single-handedly, tore that down, being an activist. And she's been, I'll tell you, I think she's been an activist since FDR. And she just really rocks. But you know what, Rodney? Next week we're going to have some ladies on I've been wanting to have on for a long time. We're going to have Anna Marie Morrell, Gina Loudon, and Morgan Brittany, the Politichicks, coming on. Conover U, with you and I, Rodney. We're going to get to talk some politics with those three ladies, three hardworking ladies. You know, since 2011, Anne Marie Morrell had a dream of Politichicks TV. She put it together with Liberty Alliance. And ever since then, those ladies have been off and running. You mentioned Lainey Sloan a few minutes ago. Lainey's one of their contributing writers. Macy France, a bunch of others. That team, Politichicks, they are rocking this country. They're encouraging conservative women to speak out. They're getting out there, and they're saying it the way it is. They're doing such a good time, and I cannot wait next week to have them on the show.
So we might have one yet. We might have one this week as well. We might have one in a couple of minutes. I'm not going to say who. It's not one of those three, but it is a Politichick. Maybe. We'll see. I'm trying to get her to call. But what were you just talking about? I had something to say about that. You know how I'm scatterbrained. Oh, I know what it is. You forgot one thing about Phyllis Schlafly, one of her huge accomplishments. She was the linchpin. She was a major force in getting the Louisiana Purchase pushed through. I don't know if you know that. Her and John McCain actually got together on that. But I am going to look forward to having the Politichicks next week because they are not only insightful and good writers, they're pretty funny. They're a fun group of people. And it's good to have gotten to have known them over the last couple of years. I myself am aligned with Liberty Alliance, and so I'm one of the in crowd. I don't know if you know that, Scott, in addition to being incredibly interesting. I'm also very powerful. So keep that in mind whenever you're, talking to me, whenever you're thinking about dissing me. And it's going to be a good time. Can you imagine, Scott, these Politichicks being on our show? It's really going to legitimize us, don't you think?
That's right, exactly. And they're excited. I've already chatted with Anne Marie today. She's excited. And I'll tell you, I'm glad you're powerful, Rodney, because, see, you're my backup in case I get in trouble for running guns down in Argentina.
Yeah.
I'm going to call you.
I know, but you're also going to find that's about the time that our friendship ends because I'm going to be bolting this direction. Listen, I honestly could talk about these brown shirts all night. You know I could. I've written a lot of articles and columns in my day. In fact, I was just telling somebody, you know Sharon Schutz over there at Lady Patriots? You know who she is? I got a phone call from her the other day. And she was talking about publishing books. And I said, you know, I've helped a lot of people write books in my day. Some million-dollar sellers, you know, multiple million-dollar sellers, New York Times bestseller. You know, that I have experience with. But other than that, I don't know a dang thing about book publishing. You know, I don't know what it takes. I don't know what it costs. I don't know what and it's changing. It changes. I know from Ann Coulter how much the business has changed. Obviously, you have this thing, this phenomenon, Kindle, where people are buying electronic books, and kids are not watching television. They are not picking up physical books. They're doing it all on their computers and their tablets. And you can buy one of these Kindles. Now, I can't do it myself. I cannot curl up with a Kindle. I cannot read a book on a computer. And that's on me. I just can't do it. I got to have that book in my hand for whatever reason. But needless to say, the business of publishing books is changing. You can buy what used to cost $22, $23 at a Barnes & Noble's. You can buy on a Kindle for what, Scott? I mean, do you know, $1.50, $2.50? Something incredibly reduced, right? And obviously the costs of printing and shipping are nothing because it's an electronic form, and that is literally the cost of goods sold there is exactly zero. I mean, once you've written the book and edited it and gotten the rights to distribute it, the cost of making another one is exactly zero because it's just a file that you have to copy. So, that, you know, the authors are having to do the voice for the audiobooks. They're having to make large concessions for the Kindle versions of the book, the electronic versions. They're having to deal, much like the music industry went through, to deal with the swapping of a file. How easy is it to send a file? It's a lot easier than to send your buddy, you know, the hardcover volume of Rodney Lee Takes on the Ants or whatever you're reading this month. So I was having a conversation about the book publishing business, Scott. I'll tell you why. I know you're curious. You're waiting on pins and needles for me to actually get to this story.
With bated breath.
In the 1990s, starting, well, actually it started before this, but New Year's Day, 1990, and every day, the entire decade, Scott, not just the year 1990, the entire decade, going up to New Year's Eve, 1999, 10 years, Scott, you know what I did every day besides going to the bathroom, look in the mirror and say, you are one handsome devil? I read 6 to 8 newspapers, some magazines, wire reports, and I wrote 6 to 10 news stories with accompanying humorous thoughts on each news story. I did that for 10 years, every day. That is a massive amount of information about the 90s. Not only that, I put a lot of thought into it because I wrote humorous anecdotes based on those specific stories, for each story, kind of like a Jay Leno monologue, only funny. And I did that for 10 years, Scott, and I was telling this to Sharon of Lady Patriots the other day, and she says, well, you're nuts. She said that you got to write a book about the 90s. I mean, it's already written. All you got to do is edit yourself, you know, your experiences with being, yeah, I mean, she said, you know more about the 90s than any person alive, probably. I said, that's right, I do. From O.J. to Bubba, right through all those Supreme Court battles, you know. It was a heck of a decade. I mean, I don't care what you say about it. It was the 60s turned upside down, quite literally. What was my point here, Scott? I did it again.
I get a bound in leather signed copy.
Yeah, of course. Of course, and you're going to have to do the fourth. And you know what I'm thinking? I'll have you do half a page after each chapter explaining where I quoted scripture. That would be pretty cool.
There you go. Rodney. You know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but it's very important because I'll tell you, the 90s were some really good years. And at the same time, the 90s is where some of the problems that we're into right now got started. You know, we sat down.
Like the housing bubble. Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. We sat down on our couches during the 90s and didn't pay attention. And while we weren't paying attention, the left basically started running around on a very local level in many ways, some federal level, some state level, and tweaking things and changing laws and getting themselves involved in things. And we're paying for that now because we weren't. We were living off the Reagan years. Things are great. We were happy. We were spoiled. But we were not paying attention. And, you know, we got into the year 2001, and we found things, our world changed. And it's been kind of chaos ever since.
I remembered what I was going to say, and it is this. But you're right. The 90s, we were living off that Reagan bump, and the economy and the tax credits The Reagan tax credits freed up the capital that caused the boom in the 90s. I don't care what Bill Clinton says. The Republican Congress forced him to balance the budget, forced welfare reform, forced tax credits. Bill Clinton had a big set of tax credits. People forget that, don't they? It was a huge boom. And, yeah, we lost sight of the ball. But let me tell you, those Democrats, they were burned by Ronald Reagan. They felt pretty burned. And I know, I was there. And I, like I said, I spent all that time every day writing all those news stories, writing all that humor, topical humor. So the point is this, Scott, and we're about to get to our next caller here on Conover U, starting riding with Conover and Scott Osborne. The point is this, I've written a lot of articles and columns in my day, but never have I gotten the response like I got to my, like I got to after my article a couple days ago about these kids being raped on these trains coming up because because the word was out, if you get your kid across the border, Obama will let that kid stay. And I tell you, I wrote the article of my career, and it's posted on joeforamerica.com. And if you haven't read it, I want you to go read it because I'm proud of it. And I did a follow-up. The first one was called, you know, Girls Rented and Raped Coming to the Border. And the second article is called Obama Guilty of Human Trafficking, Rented and Raped Part 2. And I'm telling you, buddy, I've never, ever gotten a response like I got to this first Girls Rented and Raped on Way to the Border. Shame on those for learning them. I've heard a lot of people start talking about this issue. I hope I'm doing good here. I hope I'm not just massaging my ego. I hope people are, you know, talking about it and, you know, getting above their ass and realizing that there are people in our own country that consider thousands of little girls just to be collateral damage in their quest for political power. That these little girls are going to spend the rest of their lives traumatized, not trusting anyone, certainly not trusting men, living their lives in fear, living their lives in abject fear, Scott Osborne, because these scumbags wanted to win some elections. And there's people willing to serve up little innocent girls. There's got to be somewhere in the Bible that deals with this, Scott. There's got to be.
Oh, there's plenty.
Tell me.
There is plenty. In fact, it's the foundation of the whole thing, is how we treat people. You know, you got two stories in Genesis. The first two stories after the creation are there for a purpose. They're not just to give us a little story to tell in Sunday school. You know, the story of Adam and Eve in the garden is the story about the relationship between man and God and the kind of relationship he's supposed to have. And the story of Cain and Abel is the story of how man treats man. And you put those two together, the Ten Commandments are split up into those two ways. The first four, how we treat God, the last six, how we treat man. And for man to be so abhorrent and so seriously, folks, ignorant and non-caring about the people and how they're treated. It's the worst crime that could be committed. And Washington, D.C. is complicit in this. They organized this. They encouraged this. And now we've got, like you said, Rodney, boys and girls, children, who have been horrifically treated, who will be scarred for life because of a power grab. And, you know, as we go through the Old Testament, we find some horrific religions that the Israelites and God were fighting against that boiled their children, threw their children in the fire. A lot of the foreign religions in the Old Testament were an excuse for incredible immorality. And let me tell you, we've gotten to that point in this country where we've got such abhorrent situations that it is Very much related to that. So with that, Rodney, I think we got our guest on. I kept on muting, and we were having a little bit of feedback. They've hung up and called back, so we're going to try it again, but I'll let you bring our guest in. Rodney?
I did it again, but here I am. On the line now is the infamous Lainey Sloan. She's a Politichick. Let me tell you a little bit about Lainey as soon as she figures out her mic here. Lainey has been a conservative activist, I think, since you were 14. Lainey, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
She's going to tell us a little bit about what's been going on in Murrieta, California, but tell us a little bit about yourself first, because I find your story fascinating. You live in Riverside County, is that correct, Lainey?
I live in Riverside County, California, and back in the 60s, I was a teenager. That means I'm really old, right? My parents never talked about politics in the house, but I knew who they voted for just by, I would ask them who they voted for when they came home, and they said, none of your business, but conversations happened when they knew that I wasn't listening, so I knew they were Republicans, former Democrats. But it was Roosevelt that really ticked my dad off, so then he became a Republican. But I started at 14 with Purdue Young Republicans going door-to-door, campaigning, stuffing envelopes. That was the original grassroots, although I don't think we really had the term grassroots then. So I just got bit by the bug and kept it up. And then when I moved to L.A., because I married a Los Angeles native, it never really took hold out here. I kind of laid back, except for Mike Curb was lieutenant governor, and then I got active again with that. So California's been a tough one for me. I guess I was spoiled growing up in the state of Indiana, where everybody's a Republican, it seems, or it used to be, anyway. And coming here to California, it was a huge disappointment. I was like, who are all these people who don't know how to vote? So I kind of laid off for a while, and then Tim Donnelly picked up his run for governor, and I was on his leadership team. So it was good to be back in the fold, and now we have this issue here in Murrieta with the illegals coming in.
We're going to get to that in a second, Lainey, but first I want to point out that Lainey's newest column is out today, and it's called Understanding the Threat of Islam, an interview she did with a guy named John Guandalo. Am I saying his name right? John?
Yes.
Guandalo?
Yes. Yes.
John is a former FBI special agent. He's also an expert on counterterrorism. He's been working in the post-9/11 counterterrorism era since the attack. He's your basic stud. Graduate of the Naval Academy, an officer, Marine, served in, he's a combat veteran of Desert Shield, Desert Storm, spent some time in Bosnia, not a nice place to be spending any sort of time. And also, if that wasn't enough, ladies and gentlemen, an Army Ranger, you know, what else does he do, you know? I don't know, that's a lot more than I can do in several lifetimes, but he was probably the most poignant or, you know, pertinent thing that he's done where it concerns this Islamic threat was that he created he basically invented and oversaw the implementation of the very first counterterrorism, you know, stroke education program in the FBI. He's in the FBI. That focused on specifically on the Muslim Brotherhood and their movements inside the United States. Now, Lainey, you point out that even me or anybody. I'm not talking. When I say the average American, it's not a put down for me. The average American is sitting around worried about what? Terrorism. When you say counterterrorism, they think, well, you know, there's going to be somebody blowing up a building, hijacking a plane, throwing a grenade at you, slicing your head off, shooting your son because he's in the service. But that's not what Mr. Guandalo was talking about, was it? Why don't you explain a little bit about what he was focusing on?
he was focusing on, I believe he called it cultural jihad. They're people in suits. They're friendly to us. And they serve in our key positions in the President White House's administration. So I don't have the article in front of me, so I wish I did. But John is an incredibly well-versed man on this issue. And it was just really enlightening to talk to him and learn how they're taking over in a different way. They're treating us differently. They're doing jihad here differently than they would in another country.
In other words, these are people that have outward appearances that are, you know, they're not walking around with, you know, beards and turbans and Arab-like clothing. They have suits and they've got ties, and then they're in positions of respected high-level government positions all over the government, inside the White House. And they're focusing on what the Muslim Brotherhood has in their long-term plans for the United States, the Islamic doctrine. And this guy calls it a hostile information campaign.
Right.
It is one of the most incredible interviews that you'll read. And I urge you to either go to politichicks.tv, but probably you're better off going to my Facebook page. No, go to politichicks.tv and check out Laney Sloan's interview with this guy, this hero, as far as I'm concerned, John Guantanamo. And it's called Understanding the Threat of Islam. And it's Laney Sloan's interview. You got to look at this thing, because this is not some schmo. This is not a guy in the basement screaming, you know, whatever they scream nowadays. This is a guy that knows. This is a guy who's been there. He's seen it. He's seen what they are doing, and this campaign that they are waging, of information campaign, inside our own government. I didn't know half of this stuff, and I think I know everything. Anyway, read Laney's article. Now, Laney.
Yes.
In addition to being an award-winning columnist and friend of FOR, which is friend of Rodney, you also happen to reside near Murrieta, California, do you not? We've been speaking about Murrieta all show, Laney. The buses are coming from where? What are they doing? What's been going on? You've been there, right? You've seen it? Tell us what's been happening with this this situation there. Give it the start at the beginning.
I got word a couple of weeks ago from somebody in Riverside County that Murrieta was being flooded with immigrants, 500 a day. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing, so I started looking into it. I just found it impossible that anybody could dump 500 illegal immigrants here a day. And so I wanted to find out who was behind it, was it really happening. So a couple of other girls and I started asking around, and what we found was very alarming. But we've managed to pull this thing together and get the people in the community behind it. We talked to Congressman Calvert and Congressman Duncan Hunter Jr., who actually got it stalled for three times. They were supposed to bring 500 people in a day, and they got it stalled. We never found out if they had actually dumped is the term we've been using, so excuse me, but flooded our community with these illegals. We never got the truth on that. But what we did manage to do was I have a parrot in the background, but we did manage to get the two congressmen, or they managed to get it stalled three times. Then the other day we got word that, now we've got people who are in with the Border Patrol here, and the Border Patrol is not happy about this, so they're talking to certain key people in the community. And they told us that they were going to, there was a three buses coming in. It would hold 140 people. All along we've been told that these are children and families with children. And then you wrote, Rodney, about that they were renting children. But you guys probably already touched on that. So basically what we have is we had a very successful day the other day. The buses rolled in. They were Our people, our protesters were there at 7 o'clock in the morning. We thought they might be coming around noon. I think they finally rolled in about 3, and the crowd grew. I was there early. The media was already there. I mean, probably 50 media trucks from all over, every station imaginable. And it was just our side. I want to say our side, meaning the people who were against these kids coming in and families coming in. But we managed to stand firm and get the buses to turn around. It was shocking, really, that we the people finally stood up and showed our clout. And now they're concerned that the word is out that they're bringing in buses tomorrow, July 4th, America's birthday, right? How nice. It's not that we are unkind, that we don't want these people here. It is a humanitarian crisis. I believe it was a humanitarian crisis created by the President of the United States, because I had an opportunity to interview Sean Moran, a California Border Patrol agent, who's Vice President of the National Border Patrol Council. And he said that this is coming from Washington, and that when they were interviewing the kids coming in, they were asking the parents, too, how did you hear about this? Why are you here? And they said that there were billboards and word of mouth spreading that the United States was issuing permisos. So tomorrow we hope to turn around the buses, and we've been told by, I can't say who obviously, but they said if we can turn around the 3 buses tomorrow that are planning on coming in, that they probably woke up, give up, and not come back to Murrieta. Now, when they left Murrieta the other day, they turned around and they drove back to San Diego, to Chula Vista, where they met with no resistance at all, but nobody was expecting them, so, you know, to give credit to that community. They probably didn't know it was happening. Anyway, we're feeling pretty good about this, but we're still upset. These kids evidently carrying diseases, and they need care. They need rest. It's a mess.
It is a mess, Lainey, and this is Scott Osborne. It's so good to talk to you in person.
Hi, Scott.
Lainey and I have chatted quite a few times over the last year in Facebook chat, and you're working hard out there, Lainey. You know, there's a few things in California that I miss. I got some friends out there that are working hard, and you're one of them. And, you know, Lainey, I can't imagine what's been going on out there. I just can't imagine it. I've seen pictures. Tell me a little bit about actually what was going on right down there in the middle of everything.
It started out calm. We were very well behaved, and then a Hispanic man, evidently a singer, I'm not familiar with his name or who he is, but he's supposed to be well known, came in and started chanting that, you know, that we were unkind, and saying that the Mexicans built America and, you know, they want to be here, and basically not giving Americans credit for building this country at all. It was everything that we have is from them. And so when somebody from our side started spitting in his face, and, you know, we're not going to win like that. I hated to see that, but I kind of understand the guy was upset. What did we do with this country? I mean, what about our founding fathers? So anyway, they believe they've lost it, and that we had nothing to do with it, the building, the success, the great country that we are, or that we were. So that's it, Scott. Basically, people were protesting and people were really upset, and the numbers just grew as the days came on. We started out with maybe like 10 people in the morning, and then as we got closer to noon, in the heat of the day, the numbers grew. And then we had counter-protesters come in, and it kind of got everybody's feathers ruffled a little bit. Then that night, some people went back and they had the roads blocked off. So tomorrow we don't know what we're going to find. A lot of people are going in at midnight tonight, and they're going to stay all night through noon tomorrow when the bus is expected to arrive. Hopefully it'll be a successful day and we can turn these buses around again and they'll get the message. But the bottom line to this whole thing is our system cannot handle this. Our system is overloaded. I heard that Walmart was running out of food, canned food, and I'm still trying to verify that, but...
Well, and of course, you know, I was young enough to remember, old enough to remember in the 70s when we brought in a bunch of Vietnam refugees. And I'm a firm believer in that, when it's done right. But like you say, this is a matter of purposely, I believe, trying to overload the situation. It's not mm-hmm. being done with common sense. As Rodney says, you know, you're flying kids around that have got diseases and different things. No common sense involved in it. We've all got compassion. We've got huge compassion. But we've also got common sense. And I'm so proud of you guys standing up. And big kudos, thank you, Lainey Sloan, for Lainey's been behind the scenes. We talked about the Politichicks being on next week. She's been arranging that for us, and that is huge. And always enjoy your articles, Lainey. You're a prolific writer. That article today was incredible. I'm glad I got that first thing in the morning. I had the time to sit down and really read it in peace, which doesn't always happen. But some powerful stuff, some very powerful stuff. You know, we oftentimes forget that what this great country was founded on. And when we start to look at the things that are being done behind the scenes to purposely destroy those things that we were founded on, then it leaves this country no good for anybody. We've done some great things over the years. We've had some great compassion for people all over the world. We've helped them. A lot of times our government sends money and it's not used effectively, but the private citizens in this great country have sent billions of dollars, trillions of dollars all over the world for compassion reasons. But boy, we want to keep it that way. And we thank you, Lainey. I'm going to pass it back over to Rodney to have more conversation with you. But thanks so much for calling in. It is so good to hear your voice, and I'll pass it to you, Rodney.
You forgot my name, didn't you, Scott? You forgot my name. I heard a pause. Did you hear that, Lainey? Listen, before Lainey goes, I have a question for the parrot. Do you mind putting the parrot on? I want to know if he wants a cracker. I'm pretty sure the answer is.
I'm
Lainey,
sorry.
Thanks
I should have gotten
for coming
rid-
on tonight. Thanks
hey,
for calling
one more
in.
Thing.
I really
if
appreciate it.
You're
and,
welcome.
You know, always great. Well, you know, it's really great to talk to you in person because I never get to actually hear your voice.
Well,
he's just talking to you on the chat thing. That's how we operate nowadays. We communicate over teenage social networks. So, who'd have thunk, huh?
One more thing. When they go to politichicks.com, we changed it to politichicks.com. It's no longer politichicks.tv.
Remember that, people. Politichicks.com, not .tv. That was kind of a dumb idea in the first place. I got to say that out loud. But you got to go to your .com, and I'm glad you're on the .com program now.
Thank you, Lainey. You're welcome.
Please, you're going to be coming on again, and I will see you on the intertubes. At this time, on Conover U with Rodney Lee Conover and my sidekick. Well, it's not my sidekick. He's my co-host, darn it. He's the great Scott Osborne, the preacher, Rodney Lee and the preacher. Just in time, we have another terrific guest, and let me tell you something about Paul Arnold. Paul Arnold is a guy that I've known, not that I haven't known him that long, but I know him very intensely, and I think Paul will even agree with me that's how anybody knows Paul Arnold, very intensely, and that's what I love about him. I don't think I've ever met anyone that is more dedicated and more knowledgeable when it comes to this illegal immigration and amnesty situation. Every time I turn around, Paul Arnold is organizing some massive demonstration, and it's nuts because the guy he's got a family, he's holding down jobs, and he finds time to do more work in the effort to stop this illegal immigration, to stop this insanity of amnesty. And my guess is he has plenty of insight. Paul, I want to bring you on now, and how you doing, buddy? Talk to me. Talk to me about what's going on. What is your take on this myriad of boat lift, this influx of it's an invasion, isn't it? This is not immigration anymore, is it?
No, it isn't, Rodney. Thanks for having me on the show. Hello, Scott. Hello, Rodney. The woman, what's
we'll
her name that was just on?
That was Lainey Sloan, the great Lainey Sloan.
Well, Lainey Sloan, hello. I'd like to meet you. I love what you're doing down there in Murrieta. Yeah, I've heard all about that. And I support you guys fully, and I think it's great that you are turning these buses, these damn buses around. I wish you the best success tomorrow. I will post it on my Facebook pages, and hopefully I can send you guys some more support.
Well, you know, it's crazy. It's just nuts what's going on. And I meant it when I said I've never met anyone that was more dedicated and had more knowledge than – and I know these guys at, you know, Numbers USA, and I know all these guys are these huge organizations, and they can't hold a candle to you. You're a wrecking crew, man. And tell us about – it's true. But it's true, Paul. I wouldn't say it. You know me. I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true.
Well, I appreciate that, Roddy, but I wouldn't say that I'm the most knowledgeable person. I know many people that are very knowledgeable, but
I don't know. Maybe you're just the most knowledgeable that I know. Anyway, tell us about your latest shenanigans, and I say that because I like to give you crap. But tell us about your latest efforts. You're pulling together this giant protest, and tell us all about it, man. Tell the audience.
Well. It's crazy, and it's a complete logistical nightmare, but we're having a national day of protesting against immigration reform amnesty. I don't separate those words. Immigration reform amnesty, let's call it what it is, and border surge. What we are doing is we are having a nationwide protest. We are united with overpassesforamerica.com. The great thing about overpasses is they have the infrastructure on Facebook with their 50 state pages. They have already been, you know, creating. They protest against. They ask for Obama's impeachment, and they protest amnesty and everything. But they've been doing that for like the last year, and so they have all their pages, and they're already out on these overpasses. And I'm friends with the founder, James Neighbors, and we have been talking for the last year about hooking up and doing something. And so I ran this idea by him, and he just happened to be having a national protest on those days. And so we just switched the subject from Obama to this amnesty thing. And we're really gaining a lot of traction. What we're trying to do, we're bringing in organizations and groups to join us. They go on our list of participating organizations, and so any organization that joins, we put the list on all of our press releases, on our Facebook pages, so not only are they helping the cause, but they also get a little publicity in the process, so it's working out really well.
And what are the dates on that?
It's July 18th and 19th.
Okay. Well, I hope that it's a huge success. If I know you, it's going to be a big success. And if you can find the time, would you come back on the show a week from today, Thursday, and let's promote it again because, you know, the closer we get, the more we need to get the word out.
I absolutely will, but you're going to have to remind me because I'm swamped.
Of course. I have a feeling we'll see each other on the message boards. I feel sick that that's how I communicate with people now, but that's the deal. But listen, Paul, thank you so much for calling in tonight. We're going to talk to you again, I guarantee it, a week from tonight on Conover U. And
Hold on.
Sorry, Paul.
I want to give the URL to our event page.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go right
people
ahead.
People can find – well, it's actually our main I am the founder of MakeThemListen.org, and we're on Facebook. If you go to Facebook.com/MakeThemListen.org, and at the top of that page is the link to our National Day of Protesting event page. Do I have a couple minutes?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. I'm also going to bring up here, if you don't hold on just a second. I'm going to bring up a guy that I really, really love. His name's John LaRosa. He's been on hold for a while, and I'm just going to bring him up and say hi to him. Hey, how you doing, John? Can you hear me there?
I'm here.
All right, John, hang in there just for a couple minutes. We're going to chat with Paul. And listen, if you got something to say regarding the National Day of Protest or anything having to do with immigration or being bald, for that matter, please. Just
bald
chime
is
in.
Beautiful.
Anyway, back
hashtag
to you.
Bald is beautiful. That's all people need to know. They'll find me.
That's right. Paul, go right ahead. Sorry about that. I just wanted to let John know that I hadn't forgotten about it.
That's okay. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, Paul.
So what I was saying on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/makethemlisten.org. At the top of the page, you can find the link to our event. Am I still on?
Yeah, you're right here. Keep going.
Okay. I heard some feedback. But what I was going to say is right now we're about to unveil a website we created. We are creating a list of talking points. We're getting a Twitter account. Wow, I just drew a blank. We're so busy. Press releases. We're going to release a press release on Monday to all the large news organizations like Fox. I have some connections at Fox. So I'm really anticipating this is going to be a huge event, and I would encourage everybody to come to our event page and invite your friends.
One of the things that we're going to do, Paul, is I'm actually in communication with my guy over at Joe for America, Andy Moore, who Scott LaRosa knows as well. And we're going to get your National Day of Protest up there running on our social network sites, which, as you know, are extensive. And so we'll do what we can for you. Appreciate you coming on. I'm going to let you go, and we're going to chat with with the infamous John LaRosa. John, before you start talking, I want to say something about John. John is one of these guys that you read about, that figured out long before any of these other retards figured it out, that the future of politics is going to be in social media. This is a guy that has started a company that deals in social media and helps candidates, and not just big candidates that pay him big money. This guy goes out, John LaRosa, and he finds smaller budgeted candidates, conservatives that are going up against big machines, and he helps them out. And he's quite often successful, and those races are hard to win. Scott Osborne, get with me on this one. Are those races hard to win? Because we hardly ever win. But every once in a while, a guy like John LaRosa and his partner Brad, they will come in and help a little guy just beat the crap out of some, you know, I don't say rhino anymore. I just say Republican now because everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say Republican. John LaRosa, welcome to Conover U with Scott Osborne and Rodney Lee Conover. Stan, glad to have you. Hashtag bald is beautiful.
Well, thanks for having me on, and thanks for promoting me as the guy that works for no pay. I appreciate that.
No, you get the. I know you get your big paydays. I just want people to know that, you know, you don't sit on circumstance. You don't just take the big paydays when there's a nice big, you know, budget involved. You go out and you find these little guys, and you work for very little money sometimes. I know that for a fact.
Yes,
but you work
lots of time zero.
Well,
but
you know
it's
what?
Important.
You
I think it's important
then,
to help out on
guy's
the lower
be the
level.
Incumbent, and there you go, Bob Giro. Anyway, go ahead. Tell us a little bit about.
I think it's really important to help out on the lower levels, Rodney, on occasion, because that's the farm team and that's the future. And you can't really have what we see is we have a lot of good, principled conservative candidates running across the country, congressional level. It's their first bid for office. We did a little help. We helped out J.D. Winteregg a little bit against Boehner. The guy was 32 years old. Nobody knew him in the district. He called us with, it was like less than a month ago in the race. Said, can you help us? I said, sure. So we had our friend put together a little video for him, which you may have seen, that was essentially a dick joke. And that kind of took off, and we put him from 2% name ID to 44%. I wish he'd got to us sooner, but we didn't charge him very much. But, you know, we just wanted to send the message that these incumbents aren't entitled to job security. They should go and earn it, and they should face challengers when they're not doing their job. So,
John,
we're not,
what is your take on the victory by David Bratt over the majority leader, Eric Cantor? By the way, the first majority leader ever beat in a primary by David Bratt. Now, there's a lot of this and that going on because he was a Tea Party candidate, yet he received, as I understand it, and maybe you can correct me on this, as I understand it, he received very little help from these so-called Tea Party groups, but he certainly got a lot of Tea Party votes. What you're on the inside
yep.
there. Tell us what really happened.
Well, I think you had national Tea Party groups, the quote-unquote Tea Party, and I hate the term because there is no the Tea Party, and everybody tries to demonize the term. Both establishment Republicans and progressives demonize that term for their own short-term interest. But there were no, you know, big-name national Tea Party groups that were really all in on that because they probably didn't see Bratt as viable, and they sent money and people over to help Devin and other candidates. So you had local people who were sick of being ignored, for one. You had a horrible campaign by Cantor where he didn't debate. He just totally ignored the entire race and thought he was in. People got regular people on the ground, regular constituents. I mean, I don't even want to put labels on them. We're sick of the arrogance of someone that was, representing D.C.'s interests and not theirs. And then you had Cantor's flawed campaign strategy to go negative on Bratt, who nobody knew. He basically gave him $1 million or more in earned media by going after him. And so it was kind of a whole bunch of circumstances, including the amnesty discussion, including, you know, geez, he's going to ram this through and we don't want it and he won't even come and talk to us about it. You know, if I were advising Cantor, I would be like, get in front of those people, put your spin on, you're a good BS artist. You know, just show up, do some town halls, do some debate, take a little criticism, but answer it and spin it in your way, and you're probably not going to lose. And you have millions of dollars in the bank. Don't talk about the other guy. Talk about how wonderful, America is or something like that. So there were a whole bunch of factors. Everyone said, oh, it's all about amnesty. I don't think it was just about amnesty. I think that played a role in it. I think just his arrogance and his association with amnesty and the fact that he ran a very poor campaign, whoever was advising him probably shouldn't work again. And then Bratt's people, boots on the ground, old school campaigning, the help of Cantor with his publicity, some earned media, more momentum, and he just totally blew that race. And shame on him for doing that, and congratulations to Bratt's people for working their tails off.
Well, you're listening to Conover U. I want to bring in Scott Osborne, John. I'm Rodney Lee Conover. Our guest is John LaRosa. He's the founder of Four Tier Strategies. That's Four Tier, F-O-U-R-T-I-E-R, Strategies. You can find him all over the web and Facebook and whatnot. I met him and his partner, Brad, a couple of great guys. In addition to being hard workers and down with the conservative cause, these guys are what I call Rodney Lee type guys in that they're not, you know, they understand the large and the small pictures, and they can articulate it to a sophisticated political inside D.C. audience, which none of us really give a hoot about, but they can, but John, as you can hear, can go out into the public and articulate it in such a way to get people excited. John is also involved in something pretty cool with a congressman that I love and that Scott loves, the man, Louie Gohmert. But before that, I want to bring Scott Osborne in. Say hi to your buddy, John LaRosa, because we all met John originally, I believe, on the Herman Cain campaign. What do you think about that, Scott?
Well, you know, that's right. And, Rodney, you're reading my mind, because actually we wouldn't have a Conor Ryu show had it not been for John LaRosa for a number of reasons. But I'll tell you about John LaRosa. Sometime in the middle of last year, in a special group we've got that's dear to my heart from the Herman Cain days that's still active, John LaRosa tagged me in a post and said, Scott, check this guy out. You were going to really like him. He's running for Congress. And that man's name is Rodney Lee Conover. And I did. I made friends with you, and we started talking. I shared with you some of the things you, Rodney, were on. You and John were both on the campaign side. Of course, John had feet in both sides, and I'd been on the grassroots side. And we talked about Herman Cain, and you and I have been talking on a weekly basis, at least a couple of times, three times a week ever since. So John LaRosa introduced the two of us, and John LaRosa was key. I'll tell you, four-tier, John LaRosa and Brad Marston were key to helping make the grassroots unified and connected with Herman Cain. And because of that, we've got Christy Waters and Teresa B. in the chat room. I've been friends with both of them for a long time. Teresa B. and I have chatted almost every day since. We've maintained a really good relationship, a good friendship, and a whole core group of us who work together for Herman Cain. And John LaRosa and Brad Marston basically connected us all together and helped. I know I learned a whole lot from you, John. I try and use that on a daily basis and work on a lot of different projects with you on a day-to-day basis. We've got Rich Lowry, who we just had on a couple of weeks ago. John and Brad are working closely with Rich. Of course, you mentioned the great, the one and only, the Texan, may I say, Louie Gohmert, our proud senator here in his GO team, in his GO PAC, and just some other great things. We're getting involved with John, looking towards some McDaniel stuff. And, man, I just can't say enough. You know, Michael Smith calls you sensei, and it is so very true, John. There's many, many in the grassroots, many of my friends who have learned a lot from you and Brad, and so it's always great when you call in. But I understand that you're having tea right now with somebody with the last name of Estrich. Is she sitting there with you?
Oh, you don't want me to imitate Susan Estrich, do you? You know,
well,
she worked for the Dukakis administration, and she was just very dizzy.
Boy, you pulled that one out. That was an old reference. I think that hurts my throat when I imitate her.
I'll pass it back to you, Rodney.
Just from a comedic standpoint, there are several imitations. They're just different variations of each other. You have
the Susan Estrich, and she's very ditzy and stuff like that, and she has a little Boston accent still. And then you have my mother, who has a Boston accent and a longtime smoker. So she just thinks I miss my calling. She sounds like Susan Estrich, only with a hotter Boston accent. And then
I used to open for Phyllis Diller, and that might be there.
So you morph into Harvey Fierstein from my mother. In fact, I have friends that say, how's Dad? How's Harvey? And Harvey just wants to be loved. Is that so wrong? You know, and then you can get to Charlie Rangel from there, you know, because he's from Harlem, you know. So it's all similar. It's all the same imitation. But,
thanks
for the setup.
John, I want to jump over to your latest, which is the Louie Gohmert pack. Tell us real quick what it's about and tell the audience what they can do to help out the great Louie Gohmert, because he seems to be the only one in Congress that is on the right track when it comes to this illegal immigration.
Louie has formed a pack, right? He announced at CPAC. We did a little party for him at CPAC and had Bo Snerdley showed up, and a lot of the guys from FTR Radio did live stream, and we had a nice little event for Louie and kicked off with the bang at CPAC. And Louie's very busy with House matters, as you might imagine, so he hasn't really talked about his PAC too much. But the purpose of his PAC is, in fact, the slogan is "We are the pushback." His GOH conservative pack, it's goconservative.com, G-O-H conservative.com, and at goconservative, G-O-H conservative on Twitter. His pack is designed, the mission is to support, to recruit, empower, and support principled conservatives for the House side. And why is that? And he does not endorse in the primaries. The only one he endorsed was Dan Bongino, who's a terrific guy. I happen to know him. You know, I've met him, talked to him, know him, good guy, not a client. I still love him because he proudly, compellingly, and consistently sells the benefits of conservatism without pandering to the 100%. Love the guy.
That's he just barely squeaked by in that primary, I noticed.
Yeah, he won, what, 90 to 10 or something like that? And that's why Louis didn't have a problem. That wasn't a serious primary, so Louis didn't have a problem endorsing him. He doesn't really want to get in the midst of these really high, you know, contentious primaries and make a lot of enemies. But what he does want to do, there's going to be a lot of conservatives that win primaries who the GOP establishment are going to either ignore and not fund or actively undermine. So what he wants those folks to get support, he almost wants to have it as like a House conservative fund, only he's not messing around with primaries. So he's going to support only principal conservative House members and general election candidates. And he is not going to put his name on something if they're not solid conservative. So
that's
really appreciate what
really...
he's doing, and I'm thrilled to be part of his hashtag GOH team, pushing conservative messaging and holding people accountable for their behavior. I mean, he is no friend of the Speaker. He is probably going to run for Republican Study Committee. That gig that Scalise had. So he's a very busy guy. You know, he's been on the border, physically on the border. He doesn't do a lot of press on it. He's gone to the border multiple times recently. He's been all over the place. And, you know, he's had battles with Eric Holder, somewhat fiery battles with him, battles with pretty much everybody in the Obama administration. They're not real thrilled with them. But he's one of the people that will stand up for us, and you can count on it. It's not like, well, maybe he'll vote for it this way or that way. He's going to vote the right way, and he's going to speak his mind. He's going to tell the truth. I think a lot of people want to hear more of that from their elected officials rather than just the usual BS you hear and the waffling. And the, well, you don't know how D.C. works. Well, yes, we do. It doesn't. That's why we want you to help change it. So
people
I love the guy, and I love
know,
his PAC's mission.
Do people know about this story with Louis Gohmert and Eric Holder? It was not a long time ago, but it was a little bit ago. I just think it's hysterical. But, you know, give us the Reader's Digest version, because I love this story. When he confronted, you know, there was like this phrase, and, you know, it got misunderstood.
Yeah,
what was
I'll
that
tell,
like
you
that?
The, tell you the whole thing.
Yeah.
Holder graced the House with his presence to sit there and spin and lie and obfuscate and redirect and stammer and basically run out the clock on a hearing. He had been asked to provide information well over a year before. He refused to provide the information. He was held in contempt by the U.S. Congress. And now here he is sitting back in front of committee, and Louis Gohmert starts interviewing him. And he basically asked again about the material that they had requested well over a year before, which, by the way, he found and provided to defense attorneys for terrorists, but would not provide to Congress. This is like what was really ticking Louis off. And Louis reminded him during the clip, I'm going to cut this down because it was about a 10-minute clip, that he reminded the Attorney General, our esteemed Attorney General, that he was in contempt for this reason, for withholding the stuff. Where is the stuff? And Holder arrogantly said, you don't want to go there, buddy. And Gohmert said, buddy, I don't want to go there. And he said, I don't need to take this from you. He's like, I don't need any lectures from someone who's held in contempt by this body. You know, so they went back and forth. At the very end of the exchange, which was got very heated, Holder said to Gohmert, yeah, enjoy your asparagus. Now, that was a reference to more than a year before, Gohmert was quoted as saying, you're casting aspersions on my asparagus. And he was widely mocked for saying that. Now, that was a reference to the HuffPo and the rest of the left-wing media who just loved to paint Gohmert as a lunatic. They just took the line out of context. He was quoting a famous defense attorney who used that line when people were, you know, pulling his leg, where he thought they weren't being authentic. He said, oh, no, you're casting aspersions on my asparagus. So Holder had, he was in Holder's head for well over a year, and that's all he had at the end of the hearing. So that actually got a lot of press for Gohmert and Holder. Not good for Holder. But, of course, House leadership has done nothing with him. They have the power of the purse. They could be defunding his entire operation if they wanted to, but they choose not to. And I think there are some people that are actively running cover for the administration. But Gohmert isn't one of them. And Gohmert is the one that has no problem standing up to these people. He's unafraid, and he will represent us. And that's the questions you and I would ask, regular people would ask, like, well, what the hell's the problem here? It's been well over a year. You're going to look into it? He doesn't let them get away with that stuff. And I think he does a terrific job. More people should, hopefully, through his PAC and through his just personal endorsements, he can get more Gohmerts in there. You know?
Well, it's interesting because you know that I'm just out of my mind trying to get rid of Republicans. I really do believe that we cannot do a thing to battle the Maoists, wannabes, and the Marxists, and the liberals, and the Democrats until we rid ourselves of exactly what you're articulating, these people that are enabling Eric Holder and enabling Obama and everything they're doing, and they're called Republican leaders in the House. I'm sorry. It's just come down to that. And, you know, this Eric Cantor got booted out in a primary, and you tell me, John LaRosa, did they learn their lesson and bring in a super duper conservative Louis to replace him? Who'd they get?
No, doubled down with McCarthy, Scalise. No power brokers or nobody that's in power that benefits from the system is going to willingly give that power up. They got to get thrown out. So Cantor never would have given up his power. He was in line to be speaker. There was no way he was going to voluntarily say, hey, I'm going to become more conservative and actually represent the interests of my constituents, when the Chamber of Commerce is telling him, we will actively, you know, oppose you and with a gazillion dollars, right? So he's going to play, he's going to defend their interests. Boehner's going to defend their interests. The Main Street Advocacy Pact, Crossroads, that whole, you know, the entire system of funding these establishment folks will go away if they buck them. So you really need from the people side, you know, in primaries, you need to get rid of these guys, or we need to elect more Louis Gohmerts who will vote these folks out of speakerships and out of leadership positions. They don't have the votes to get rid of Boehner right now.
Well, I guess if there's one, yeah, I guess if there's one thing that I have that sticks in my craw, and that is this insistence to not get involved in primaries, because, John, that's exactly what we need, is to get involved in primaries.
Yep.
We need
and especially those primaries where the Republicans are going to win the general, that primary is the lead election, you know, an R plus 30 district or something, right? why are you letting the establishment person, you know, to pull a Cochran and demonize, you know, the conservative as a racist, brand him as, and go buy votes? You know, aren't we supposed to be helping out the challenger here? But, you know, he hasn't been actively talking about his PAC, so he hasn't been raising money. His limited resources in the PAC because it's brand new PAC. So he can't just go to every race. He made a decision to wait until the generals, because of those limited resources, he was going to just pick and choose a few to help out. One of the reasons I'm very happy that he picked Bongino, and this goes to your point, because Bongino is in a blue state, and it's not a total moonbat district, it's a little D plus a couple points. If Dan Bongino can win in blue state Maryland by selling conservative principles in a way that touches everybody, the 100%, common sense, regular people, Democrats, Republicans, independents, without selling out, without pandering, he can do that. That's a huge statement to be made across the country. I mean, that's why, you know, I like Tim Donnelly in California over Kashkari, because if he gets through and somehow pulls out a win, it shocks the world.
Yeah.
Right? The conservative
It's not any given race that sticks in my craw. It's just this, I hear just so much blanket, you know, and listen, I'm not trying to single out Louis Gohmert at all. I mean, I know Louis was backing Dan Bongino, and what you're saying is absolutely true. You know, there's only one competitive race in Maryland for the Republicans, and that's Bongino's. And so it's critical. The rest of them, forget it.
Think of the message that sends to other states. You know, you get people pushing the establishment candidates in red states. What if the conservative can actually prove that he can win in a blue state in a general, right? Then, you know, because their entire argument on the establishment side is electability, right? It's all about electability. Elect the R. We need the R. You know, in the Senate, we need the R to get rid of Harry Reid. It doesn't matter if the guy's a socialist, as long as he has an R.
Yeah.
Well, R is not a compelling value proposition to regular people. It's certainly not to me as an unenrolled voter myself, because I'm not joining the Republican Party. They stand for nothing. Until R stands for something other than retreat, I will not join the Republican Party. Simple as that. Now, do I vote for Democrats? No. But, Louis and I and Brad talked in D.C. about primaries, and part of it was the resources, and part of it was you tend to make a lot of enemies in primaries. And so the combination of the two, he decided, plus he's so busy with the House stuff, that he couldn't devote the time he needed to raise the kind of money he needed for his PAC to actually make a big difference in any race. So he's like, you know, I'm not going to go in kind of half-heartedly, throw my name on something, kick off one side or the other, and then have no impact. So I think that what he wants to do is pick and choose a few races in the general and really go hard for that candidate in the general, especially when the establishment is actively trying to undermine him. Or they walk away from him, and they'd rather see the Dem win because that candidate, you know, kills their narrative about electability. You've got to be Dem-lite to be electable, you know, which I always say, you know, how'd that work out for Presidents Romney and McCain? But, it's like I think he's doing the right thing for him at this time, and I think he could, should he want to, and should he devote some time to this, he could position his PAC as the only PAC people trust. There's so many PACs that people are like, ugh, wow, they did data capture on this race, but they didn't help the candidate. You know, I won't even name names, but there were PACs when I was working for Winter Egg who were every day, fire Boehner, fire Boehner, fire Boehner. No support for Winter Egg. They just wanted email addresses. Sign the petition.
Right.
Fire Boehner.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just outrageous. I mean, if you're gonna go out on a limb and say fire the guy, how about helping the people fire the guy with the candidate? So, I totally get it. There are so many, so many primaries that the challengers need help. I just think that that's probably down the road for him. And hopefully I can actually do more interviews and tell people about his pack and have him jump on some interviews to talk about his pack.
Hey, that's what we want. We want the great Louis Gohmert on the
I will try
to review.
But
I know
he's
busy enough and you're going to want him to be doing something else. And I wasn't trying to single out Louis. I love Congressman Gohmert. He's awesome. He's like, I really can't think of anybody else that has it exactly correct in the House of Representatives when it comes to the border. Now, I know there's probably many, but how many of them have a bill that says shut down the border before we talk about anything else? I mean, that's really there.
Well,
would
it's
not
interesting
be
when people were seeking
American
his
kids
support
here if Louis Gohmert was in charge.
When people were seeking his support for a majority leader, he's like, I'm not going to put my name unless you literally sign a pledge that no immigration bill will come up. So he had McCarthy and Labrador, and neither would sign the pledge, so he didn't endorse either. He's like, no, this border's got to be secure before any bill comes up about immigration. And it's got to be the border security has to be verified not by the feds, who are just absolutely full of crap and they'll do what they're told from above, but by the states, by the border states. And you know that's not going to happen under the Obama administration, which means there'd be no immigration bill. But neither one of them would sign that pledge to him, so he just said, best of luck to you. You know,
well,
so
that is, speaking of best of luck to you, it's our guest, John LaRosa, founder, partner, Four-Tier Strategies, and hashtag all-around good guy. Thanks for coming on tonight. I'm going to send it over to your buddy, Scott Osborne, who's going to say goodbye to you and say goodbye to our audience. Scotty, are you there?
I am here. My phone's about to die, so folks, if it is all of a sudden ends, that's what happened. One of the problems with Blog Talk Radio and a phone with only 2 hours. Anyway, thank you so much, John. You know, I owe you huge, huge kudos. You've always been there in the background, working on all kinds of campaigns. You stepped up at different times during Dan Hughes, during Zach Poskovich. You've been a good friend. I've learned a lot from you. You are single-handedly responsible for connecting me with a lot of people. Campaign, and we always look back to that with fond memories. I chat with you almost daily in different groups, and it's always good to have you on the show. We'll have to have you and Brad come on a show again one time soon and talk just specifically about Four-Tier and the work you do and continue our discussion. And I'll tell
That'd
you, work
great.
On it. We'll have to work get you and Karen to work on getting the great Louis Gohmert. Or I could drive 10 miles towards the east and go knock on his door. Either one. Anyways, thank you so much, John.
Okay, and thanks for having me on, guys. Rodney, see you online.
I'm right here, buddy, and I will see you then. Thanks again.
Okay, have a great night.
Well, Rodney, it was a great show. I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up because I'm not quite sure how much longer this phone's going to last. It's beeped about 4 times. I think it went another beep. I think it's going to just about die on us before we get anything ended. But it was a great show, everybody. We look forward again next week, like we say, to Con Over You when we have the great Politichicks, Anne-Marie Morel, Dr. Gina Loudon, and Morgan Brittany. Great, great folks, of course, with their team of people like Laney and Macy France and many other wonderful ladies across the nation pushing conservative values. And I think since we did a little bit of talking about Louis Gohmert, I think it might be a wise idea to close out the show tonight, Rodney, with a song that is near and dear to my heart. It's one of our favorite songs here in Texas. You know what it is. Good night, folks.
The stars
good night.
Are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas. The prairie sky is wide and high. Deep in the heart of Texas, the sage in bloom is like perfume. Deep in the heart of Texas reminds me of
in the heart of Texas. The cowboys cry, "Yippee-yi!" Deep in the heart of Texas, the doggies bark.